I'm going to read from Canto 1, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 7, Text Number 6. There's a little ring back in this. This verse is part of a series of four verses in Srimad Bhagavatam that are very, 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 very important verses in that they express the essence of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. A little bit of just the composition of the Bhagavatam first. The first three chapters of the Bhagavatam are also a summary of the whole Bhagavatam in this sense. In the first three chapters of the Bhagavatam, there's a description of the qualifications of a speaker, the qualifications of a receiver of the Bhagavatam's message, how one should approach that speaker, how one should hear from the speaker, which are very important messages of the whole Bhagavatam. They're repeated in different places but throughout the Bhagavatam, but they're laid out deliberately and sequentially. And then in the first chapter there's six essential questions that one can say the whole of the Bhagavatam is addressing, but one can also say the next two chapters answer each of the six questions. And they're fantastic questions, of course. One of them is, for example, the sages ask Sutta Goswami, the message of the Vedas is very, very vast. And in this age of Kali, people's lives are very short. And their spiritual inclination is greatly diminished. Their minds are always disturbed. They're always being cheated. It's a very, very difficult time. People aren't going to take the time to go through the vast totality of all the Vedas to understand the essence. So can you explain the essence of all the Vedas very succinctly, please? Great question. And so forth. Other essential questions. And chapters 2 and 3 are responding to those six questions. So in one sense, the Bhagavatam is the first three chapters. And then the next three chapters begin with the sages asking Sutta Goswami, since you said the answer to one of the questions was, now that Krishna has left, during his presence, religious principles were being protected and upheld. Now that Krishna has left, where's that protection for religious principle? And the answer, the very last part of the third chapter, just after Krishna's departure, like the sun setting in the west, on the eastern horizon, as brilliant as the sun, the moon-like Srimad Bhagavatam appeared, giving light in this dark age of Kali. Very beautiful poetic imagery. The setting of the sun and the rising of the moon. As brilliant as the sun. One problem with the way that we run programs is kids like kirtan and they make noise during kirtan. When the kirtan's over, they think it's still kirtan. That's our problem. So, after hearing that at the end of the third chapter, that the Srimad Bhagavatam appears as the non-different than the personality of Godhead Krishna in his literary form to give light in this dark age of Kali. So a very natural question at the beginning of the fourth chapter is, how does the Srimad Bhagavatam make its appearance in this world? Just like how does Krishna make his appearance, or how does Radharani make her appearance, how does the Jamuna make her appearance, how does Radhakund Shyamakund make their appearance, how does Srimad Bhagavatam make its appearance? Please describe this to us. So Sutta Goswami describes in the fourth chapter, Vyasadev, being a literary incarnation of God, had the capacity to be a perfect knower of past, present, and future. That's pretty amazing. To be a perfect knower of anything. Of not all things present, and equally so all things in the past and all things in the future. So he looked into the future. And what he saw was shocking. He saw the age of Kali. And its deteriorated, greatly unfortunate circumstances for the living entities who would live in that age of Kali. And being compassionate, he wanted to do something now for that situation that would come later. And being a literary personality, his effort was a literary effort. He took the Vedas that were previously in sound vibration form, in oral tradition they were received, he put them in a written form, because in the age of Kali, one of the things that diminishes is memory. One of the very practical teachings that Prabhupada gave is, if you want to remember something, write it down. Right? If there's something that's important for you to do, write it down. And don't forget where you put that place where you wrote it down. I find that it works. You just write it down. And being responsible, you get it done. But if you don't write it down, you forget. I know there was something I was supposed to do. I wonder if I can't remember what that something was. So you write it down. So Vyas undertook the task of taking the vast Vedas and putting it in a written form that people in this age of Kali could go and read. And then he made it easy, or easier, by taking the one Veda, because the Veda was one, and divided into four according to departments of understanding of the one Veda. And then he wrote explanations of the Vedas. From the Shrutis, he wrote the Smritis. And then he summarized in the form of Vedanta Sutra. And he wrote the philosophical portion that is part of the four Vedas, the Upanishads. Vast undertaking, huge compilation. And when he was all done, as he was compiling those Vedas and the Shrutis and the Smritis, he entrusted them to different disciples. You take care of this one, you take care of that one. And then they had their team, their assistants that worked with them to preserve each of the Vedas, each of the portions of the Vedas. So that's described in the fourth chapter. At the end of the fourth chapter, Vyasadev steps back from his work to see how did it come out. Like anything that we do. You dress the deities, you cook an offering, you write a paper, do a homework assignment. And you step back and say, how did it come out? You do a project of work, you do whatever you call that, a test run. Step back and see how it works. So Vyasadev did that, and when he was contemplating, he felt something. And he felt a pinch in his heart. that said, something's not right. We all know what that feeling is. Something's not right. He felt insufficiency. And that's how the chapter ends, and the next chapter begins. Narada appears. Ta-da! Right at the right time, at the right place to say the right things. It's Narada. So Vyasadeva asks his spiritual master, Narada Muni, this feeling, why am I feeling this feeling? And Narada says, maybe you did a lot of things right, but maybe you inordinately emphasized one thing and didn't sufficiently emphasize the essence. The one thing that you adequately presented was how the conditioned souls who have strong material desires can act according to theistic conduct and make proper sacrifices in order to fulfill those desires in a pious way. And in this way, you've encouraged them too much in that which they're already inclined to, material activities, although piously performed, still too much. And as a result, the essence will be lost for them. And that's why you're feeling not satisfied. And so you should just write the essence. Write one literature that's just the essence and none of this other. It's called Pravritti. Pravritti is the path of progressive material enjoyment. And essentially he's saying you should write one literature that's Nivritti, the path of progressively decreasing material involvements as one increases spiritual connection to the Supreme. Then he told them how to do it. He said, you should fix your mind in trance, complete absorption upon the personality of Godhead. And then the second thing was that realization that you have in that position, the realization that you have in that position, let that be the subject matter of this one literature. And then he said to Vyas, I've done the same thing. And then he just gives his whole life story from his previous life, which happened to be a previous day of Brahman. That's a long time ago. So he gives his lifetime and how he became from a nobody to Narada Muni by the process of hearing, practicing bhakti yoga, gradually detaching himself from material affinity, absorbing himself in devotion to the personality of Godhead, and gradually coming to the stage of spiritual perfection. It describes that stage of spiritual perfection that he attained. That was interesting. No snoring allowed, huh? Okay. So that's how the chapter ends. And then chapter 7, so 4 is Narada Vyas compiling. 5 is Narada teaching Vyas what the problem was and the solution. And 6 is his life, how he became Narada. So 7 begins. Narada departs. Vyas follows the instruction of his spiritual master. He goes to the Saraswati River, performs his duties for purification, sits down. It's Satya Yoga, so he does the process for Satya Yoga. He engages himself in trance of meditation. And in that trance of meditation, something happens. And that's what these verses describe. And these verses are the essence of what Srimad Bhagavatam is. It's exactly what Narada told him. The realizations that you have, let that be the basis of this one literature that just describes the essence. So I'm going to read the previous two verses, because when I was in California, I just spoke on the two verses, and then come to the third one. So it starts with text 4. Thus, bhakti yogena manasi. He fixed his mind, perfectly engaging it, by linking it in devotional service, bhakti yoga, without any tinge of materialism. And thus he saw the absolute personality of Godhead, the Lord appeared in his mind, in his heart, along with his external energy, which was under full control. Very quickly, we'll hear in the purport for today's verse that he saw the personality of Godhead means he saw the whole spiritual world, because Krishna is never alone. He's always with his loving associates in his transcendental abode, engaging in loving exchanges with them. It's in his fullness. Purusham Purnam is the Sanskrit. That's the personality of Godhead in fullness. That's everything. He saw the spiritual world, and the Lord in the center of that spiritual world. And his external energy, which was under his full control. The external energy specifically is situated behind him, under his control. Normally we don't see the personality of Godhead, because all we see is external energy. Like the example of looking in the sky and seeing lots of clouds and not seeing the sun. We know that the sun is there because it's light instead of dark, but we can't see the sun because of the clouds. So similarly, commonly we don't see the personality of Godhead. At least most of us don't. And we're seeing, you know, the external energy in its different gross and subtle features. But we're not seeing the personality of Godhead. So, because Vyas had, under the order of Narada, had fixed his mind, the Supreme Lord withdrew that external potency under his control, had the external potency situated behind him, and he could see that potency and see the Lord. The next verse. Due to this external energy, the living entity, although transcendental to the three modes of material nature, thinks himself as a product, as a material product, and thus undergoes the reactions of material miseries. So he didn't just see the Lord and his external energy, he saw the living entities. In fact, today's verse, he saw the whole thing. It details it. But so there's the Supreme Lord, there's material nature, there's the living entities, and then there's the fruitive activities of the living entities, and there's time. Those five are the subject matters of Bhagavad Gita, those of you that have read the introduction to Bhagavad Gita. And if you can understand those five, you can understand the whole Bhagavad Gita. You have understood the whole Bhagavad Gita. So here it's in one verse, or three verses. He saw the living entities, and he saw their struggle. They're struggling with the material energy. They're struggling with their desire to be the enjoyer of material energy, and thus they're struggling with the material energy. Because the material energy is not meant for our enjoyment, the material energy is God's energy. It's meant for His enjoyment. And as the servants of the personality of Godhead, we're meant to address ourselves to this energy, using this energy in His service. But not thinking that way, thinking instead, independently I want to be the enjoyer, the living entities struggle. And then the other message that's embedded here is, that's very unfortunate, because they're actually, they have nothing to do with the material energy. They're transcendental. Paropi. Api means although, and para means transcendental. Although they're of the same category as the Supreme Lord, free from the modes of nature, they're implicated in material existence because of this mistaken, foolish, and rebellious idea of trying to independently enjoy from the Supreme Lord. And so they struggle and experience material existence. So that's the problem. And this morning's verse, or this afternoon's verse, today's verse, is the solution, the mitigation process. Anarkopashamam sakshat bhakti yoga matoksa jay lokasya janato vidvang chakre sattvata samitam. Translation. Oh, the material miseries of the living entity, which are superfluous to him, can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service. But the mass of people do not know this, and therefore the learned Vyasadeva compiled this Vedic literature, which is in relation to the Supreme Truth. The verse starts, anartha. Those who have been practicing Krishna consciousness for a little while, we know all about anarthas. Artha means something wanted, and anartha means something unwanted. And that which blocks our spiritual progress is the fact that there's unwanted things, anarthas, in the heart. And the business of devotional service in the initial stage is purification, cleansing those unwanted things. And when they're cleansed, that the natural thing, the wanted thing, is there. The dormant love of God is there. As dormant love of God awakens and the unwanted things are cleansed, then maturing stages of devotion are what we experience until that purification takes place. We're busy purifying ourselves by the same process. We don't need a different process. The linking process of bhakti yoga. Purport. Just one paragraph. Srila Vyasadeva saw the all-perfect personality of Godhead. This statement suggests that the complete unit of the personality of Godhead includes his parts and parcels also. That's living entities. God and the living entities, or say more broadly, God and his energies. Living entities is one of the categories of God's energies. We're one of the categories of God's energies. Marginal energy. But we're one of God's energies. Qualitatively, like God. Quantitatively, very tiny. Because God has qualities of unlimited divine consciousness, we have very limited consciousness. Unlimited knowledge, we have limited knowledge. Natural happiness, we have capacity for happiness. It's natural. It's natural. We want happiness because we're part of the supreme happiness. We want to expand our capacity for knowledge because it's our nature. We're part of that supremely conscious being. We want eternal life. And not just we, the insect, a worm, a bug, a bird, a giraffe, whatever, that wants eternal life. Why? Why is it like that? Because we're eternal. It's our nature. But how to repose ourselves or be situated so that that's what our experience is instead of this one. Fear and death and disease and old age and so many problems. So he saw the personality of Godhead in his fullness, implies he saw with the living entities also. He saw, therefore, his different energies, namely internal energy, marginal energy, and external energy. He also saw his different plenary portions and parts of the plenary portions, namely his different incarnations also. And he specifically observed the unwanted miseries of the conditioned souls who are bewildered by the external energy. That's what he saw. And because he's such an elevated person, he felt something after he saw. He felt compassion. He knew what the problem was, and he knew what the solution was, and he felt compassion. So he did something. At last he saw the remedial measure for the conditioned souls, namely the process of devotional service. It is a great transcendental science and begins with the process of hearing and chanting the name, fame, glory, etc. of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, revival of the dormant affection or love of Godhead does not depend on the mechanical system of hearing and chanting. What does that mean? But it solely and wholly depends on the causeless mercy of the Lord. When the Lord is fully satisfied with the sincere efforts of the devotee, he may endow him with his loving transcendental service. But even with the prescribed forms of hearing and chanting, there is at once mitigation of the superfluous and unwanted miseries of material existence. Cheto darpana marjanam bhava mahadavagni nirvapanam. Exactly what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is teaching is right here in the Bhagavatam, one of the key verses of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. Our acharyas have written again and again and again about these particular verses. They're volumes of pages of commentary on these verses because they're so important. In Jiva Goswami's six sandarbhas, there are commentaries on the Bhagavatam, and it's not verse by verse or section by section, but it's topic by topic. And in his sandarbhas, he refers to these verses, these verses I'm speaking about, four different times, and elaborately explains them, and then explains them again from another perspective and from another perspective, because the essence of the Bhagavatam is here. Very important verses. So the mitigating principle is the process of devotional service. So consider how fortunate we are. We're just walking along the path of life, trying to be nice people and knowing somewhere there's something beyond the veneer of this material existence. That's what's really important. Nice to be a good person, mode of goodness person, be nice, don't hurt people, all those good things. There's something more fundamental, however. That's Shraddha, the preliminary faith that's necessary for devotional service to begin. And then something else happens. There's Krishna sends a devotee, Sadhu Sangha. And in that association of the devotee passes on some of the bhakti that they've received from others. And they just share some of that bhakti potency or bhakti message. And we, because our receiver was on, we received it. And then in that association of devotees, we do the things that the devotees do. Bhajana Kriya, devotional activity. And in the process of that devotional activity, the impurities, the unwanted things, the anarthas, are gradually cleansed. Sometimes too gradually. But still it's going on. Gradually. Stay with the process and the impurities become cleansed. And after that cleansing takes place, then some steadiness. Steadiness is described in the second chapter of this first canto, which is where the impurities are nearly gone. Nashta prayeshu abhadreshu. Prayeshu means almost to nil. Nashta prayeshu, destroyed almost to nil. Abhadreshu. There's bhadras and there's abhadras. Auspicious and inauspicious. The inauspicious things of the heart are destroyed practically to nil. Almost gone. So then there's steadiness. Until that happens, there's unsteadiness. That's the territory that we're very familiar with, the unsteadiness territory. Anishtita bhakti. But stay with the process, because the process is a cleansing process. It cleanses the heart. Anarto pasamam sakshad bhakti yogam adhoksa jay. It's effective. This is a commercial for bhakti yoga. And after that steadiness, then some taste. And then attachment, and then ecstasy, and then the full mature stage of love of God. This is what's described by Rupa Goswami. It's described in the earlier portion of this first canto, chapter 2. And now it's being presented in a very tight, distilled essence form in these verses, describing Vyasadeva's realization. It is a great transcendental science and begins with the process of hearing and chanting the name, fame, glory, etc. of the personality of Godhead. Revival of the dormant affection or love of Godhead does not depend on the mechanical system of hearing and chanting, but it solely and wholly depends on the causeless mercy of the Lord. When the Lord is fully satisfied with the sincere efforts of the devotee, he may endow him with his loving transcendental service. But even with the prescribed forms of hearing and chanting, there is at once mitigation of the superfluous and unwanted miseries of material existence. Such mitigation of material affection does not wait for development of transcendental knowledge. Rather, transcendental knowledge is dependent on devotional service for the ultimate realization of the Supreme Truth. So even if one is illiterate or not well read or kind of new at all of this, the process is acting immediately. There's a verse in the second canto that describes or compares the process of hearing to in the purport, Prabhupada compares it to a medical procedure where a highly potent drug is injected intravenously within the body, which means that it at once spreads throughout the whole body. So, similarly, by the process of hearing, through sound vibration, spiritual sound vibration that enters the ear, it once acts. on the heart, and it acts on the whole system. The whole, we're reading in the Sankhya Yoga section of Lord Kapiladeva that explains it in such technology headspins. But it works very, very, very quickly. At once it mitigates that contamination or the affinity for material existence. It's something like somebody that has an addiction, whatever that might be, and then put them in the vicinity of that object that's their addiction. It's too much. A drug addiction or alcohol addiction or something addiction, and put them in the right in the midst of it. A sugar addiction. And have them live in a confectionery. So the antidote for this material affinity, the affinity for that which is the source of our misery, is the mitigating process, the process of devotional service, where the through the hearing process, the consciousness of our natural attraction for Krishna becomes awakened, and the detachment for the objects of seeing objects as potential for material enjoyment. Instead, some opportunity to serve Krishna, another opportunity to serve Krishna, another opportunity to serve Krishna. Supported by the hearing process. So that the sound vibration method is what Vyasadeva understood was needed, and following the hearing of that sound vibration, the activities of devotional service properly directed. And so he compiled this Srimad Bhagavatam exactly as Narada had instructed him. I'll just go ahead a little bit. After Vyasadeva compiled Srimad Bhagavatam, he taught it to his son, and the son of Vyasadeva is Shukadeva Goswami. And right there the sages say, wait. Shukadeva Goswami was a liberated soul. Why did he have to go and study something? He doesn't need anything. But he was very attracted, so please explain. So it's explained by Sutta Goswami, another very famous verse, the Atmarama verse. This just shows the nature of Srimad Bhagavatam is not material. Because one who is not attracted to anything material became attracted to Srimad Bhagavatam. This evidence is what's in Srimad Bhagavatam has nothing to do with something material. Otherwise, Sukadeva Goswami would have no interest in it. But he was very interested in it. Because it's simply glorification of the personality of Godhead. It's existing on the transcendental plane, and therefore as a transcendentalist he was very attracted. That's the meaning of this Atma Rama. One whose satisfaction is from within, Atma Rama. Atma Rama's cha munayo, dear grantha. The scripture that's attractive to the liberated souls is the Srimad Bhagavatam. And while it's attractive to the liberated souls, for those of us that are affected or infected by material existence, it's a good medicine. And it's a medicine that's taken through the ear. And it enters the heart. And it cleanses the heart. And it awakens the heart to the natural position of devotional service. They're meant to go side by side, the kirtan, just like how we began. And then, as the heart becomes cleansed from the chanting of Krishna's holy name, hearing the message of the glories of Krishna, the name, the qualities of Krishna, the pastimes of Krishna, and his wonderful devotees, and the process of connecting with him. That's the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. I think that's a good place to end. So when you have the time in the course of your busy lives, take your Srimad Bhagavatam off of the shelf, open up, and drink the nectar in the form of sound vibration. And let that enter your heart. Shrinvanti Gayanti Grananti Sadavaha. Let it go within your heart and guide your life, and it'll be a whole other life. Or you'll see things and experience things in a different way from that, just from this association of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's very powerful like that. Any questions or comments, anyone? Yeah?
Maharaj, we were discussing about mechanically doing devotional service. Is it because as a conditioned soul I am used to just seeing them as an activity rather than service? Is it because of that?
Yeah, you say it the other way around, it's minus the spirit of devotion behind the activity. In Nectar Devotion, Rupa Goswami says the same thing. It's not the activities of devotional service themselves. Let's say when we do arti, what are we doing? We're ringing a bell. We're waving a stick of incense. So anybody that rings a bell or waves a stick of incense, it's not the same. So it's not the activity per se. It's the consciousness Krishna, please accept. There's a form. We ring a bell and move some incense stick. And there's a fragrance, and the fragrance is offered to the Lord. But making the offering, that's the essence. And with hearing and chanting, as specifically mentioned, not the mechanical hearing and chanting. Bhaktisiddhanta describes this. You can make a machine that makes the sound. Or you can train a parrot to make the sound and make the sound. And that's not the same as what the essence of chanting is, and hearing and chanting. And the answer to your question is yes. We're accustomed to doing things mechanically. We do something and get a result. But that's not devotional service. It's not like that. It's not a vending machine. Something else? Yes?
Like Maharaj, just like you mentioned, like we are doing the offering to Him, Supreme Personality of Godhead, but He doesn't need it, right? So gradually our love develops for Him by offering.
It's likened to a child walking or learning to walk. Walking propensity is there in a small child, but they don't know how to walk yet. And by practicing walking, they can walk. And then the next thing you know, they're running. They're running here, running there, running there. Right? Because the walking propensity is innate. So similarly, the devotional propensity is innate. And the activity helps the devotional propensity come out. And in the mature stage, the devotional activity will still be performed, but the essence is the offering, the devotion. And then through that act of devotion, of offering something, the devotional tendency in general becomes awakened. That means our life becomes an offering. Whatever we do, it becomes an offering. Through the regulations of standard forms of devotional practice.
So ultimately it leads to like your full surrender. I mean, gradual.
Sure. But more specifically to the point, the expression of the heart that my life is a life of devotion to the Supreme. And that's the purpose of my life. Whatever it is that makes up the activities. So therefore it's not a mechanical process, it's a devotional process. Particularly powerful in awakening the devotional tendency through prescribed devotional practices. But the outcome is one's whole life. Whether I'm ringing the bell and offering the incense stick, or driving my car, or sitting in the office, or with my children, or whatever I'm doing, it's an offering to the Supreme, a service to the Supreme. And then I go back and do the regulations of sadhana bhakti. It strengthens again the spirit of devotion to the Supreme. Something else? Yes?
Maharaj, I heard that you also mentioned every day out of the top five most potent forms of devotional service, one of them is hearing Srimad Bhagavatam or reading Srimad Bhagavatam. I do not remember now. But if I have limited time, is hearing a class on Srimad Bhagavatam better or reading Srimad Bhagavatam is better?
He wants to know, is reading or hearing Srimad Bhagavatam better? They're both better. Anything else? You have something? No. Okay.
What is it?
Yes.
In the beginning you were talking about like Vasudeva was feeling compassionate when knowing the degradation of the Kali Yuga. So he wrote all this vast literature. So like when we hear somebody sharing their what they are going through. So
when we hear what someone is going through?
Yeah, like in their life.
Like Vyas? Or just somebody you know?
No, just somebody you know.
Somebody you know, okay.
Yeah. So, by being compassionate towards them, like, whatever I've heard from my superiors, that I share, I know that I cannot own that problem and I cannot solve that problem. But
you remember our discussion earlier today. That's good.
But still feeling in myself that somehow if they get help with Krishna's mercy, then they can able to focus their in devotional service.
Very good.
And like in that situation, like when I'm doing my sadhana, just the thoughts comes.
Uh-huh.
So how to be like, you know, detached from that and just trying to be in mood of service.
By being in a mood of service. Who's the controller and who's the servant?
Servant.
Okay. Stay in your position, servant. Now, who is it that you're serving? Krishna. You're serving Krishna. So, your well wishes towards another will automatically be carried to the other. Because they're dear to you. You just become dear to Krishna, taken care of. And how do you become dear to Krishna? Just as he describes. Katiyantascha mam nityam tushyanti cha dharmanti cha. Do that. Where does the focus of your attention go when you're doing your sadhana? Your focus of your attention goes to the sound vibration, the sound of Krishna's name. Now in your heart, so here comes this descending fullness of Krishna's mercy in the form of sound. Now in your heart is also this care and concern. So that could, for someone, that's going to be nourished just by the sound of Krishna's name. But supposing your attention goes away from Krishna's name, of course it hardly ever does that, but supposing that were to happen, and you start thinking instead about Krishna, you start thinking about some part of Krishna's creation. Which is going to be more effective? Bring your attention to Krishna. Krishna knows the concern that you have and the struggle that they are going through, and they're dear to you. If you become dear to him, the fullest potential of well-being goes to them. Going in that direction is a way of becoming mature in devotional service, and then you become a better instrument in Krishna's hand to help others. Your well-wishing becomes more powerful, more potent, more empowered because of the purity and focus upon the personality of Godhead. It doesn't diminish your concern, it just makes it more effective by dint of your Krishna consciousness. Your capacity will increase, the range of the number of persons who you feel in compassion for will naturally increase. But the other way is artificial. It's I'm gonna fix the situation consciousness. It's not our position. Easy to say, then it's another thing to do. But you practice. Okay. So, we'll have some more kirtan.